fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is this Don?
This is Don.
Hi, Don. This is Christian. I am here with Corey and our pal, Leon.
Hello.
And, hello. Nice to meet you.
This is Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be part of Part-Time.
Yeah, well, just so everyone knows, this is Don Lund. He is a friend of Corey Blake's. And we are having him on here because, well, we wanted to talk a little bit about Thor because there's a new movie coming out on Friday, Thor: The Dark World, correct? And Corey suggested that you would know a lot more about Thor than the rest of us all put together because, unfortunately, we weren't big Thor collectors, you know?
And why not? You know, what, there's got to be a good excuse because you've got to, you know, everything that you want in a superhero. He's a god. He's tough. He can give you all the good lessons. And you know, let's not forget God. We're focusing on, right? He's a Norse god.
Yeah, yeah. Well, right. I mean, in mythology. But I guess that's a good question. Why didn't we? I mean, well, I was just talking to them because about the Thor omnibus, the Walter Simonson omnibus.
Right.
And that's when I really became familiar with the character, you know, was through Walt Simonson and his run in the 80s. And that just really just blew my mind back in the day because it was just the scope was just so big, you know, and the artwork was so full of energy. And I cracked open the omnibus last night for the first time or yesterday for the first time in a while. I think I read through like the first five or six stories and I found it to be pretty compelling stuff. When did you start reading Thor?
Well, it's been a while. I'm kind of an old guy. So I mean,
as are we all.
Since the 70s for me.
Wow.
Yeah, I had started with, you know, the standard kind of Spider-Man stuff and Superman and Crypto and some other of the standard hero comics, and then a friend handed it to me because it wasn't of any value to him anymore, an issue that didn't have a cover anymore. Uh-huh. And so, but it was just so different, you know, the setting. You have your standard superheroes hanging out in the alley, and here was a guy flying on a ship through the stars with other Vikings on his way to try to find his dad, and you know, Odin, you know, who, you know, creator of the nine worlds, or the son of, anyway. So it was a lot of fun, a lot. I guess the uniqueness is what attracted me to the character to begin with, and then I went backtracked from there and checked out the Stan Lee and the great Jack Kirby, King Kirby. We couldn't have Thor without him. And that's actually, and that was the inspiration really for the Simonson run that you were talking about. And it's a great jumping on point. If anybody ever wants to just start into Thor, there's nothing wrong with starting either with the Lee Kirby stuff or the Simonson run, which is Hall of Fame worthy for sure. But
Don, yeah. Did you ever find out what issue that was that you had, the one without the cover?
Yeah, I think it was 253. Yeah, I mean, and since I still run a Thor fan site that I've run for like a decade, where we get to talk about the issues every month. And,
oh, we got the right guy then.
Yeah, so yeah, you do have a Thor fanatic that's been enjoying it for a long time. Yeah, it was actually Thor 258. It was Len Wein who gave us Wolverine, of course, in the New X-Men. Len Wein was the writer at the time. John Buscema was the artist on it. They had followed. This is about the third major run in Thor after Lee Kirby, and then you had Conway and Buscema, and then Len Wein came on for a little bit, Marv Wolfman for a little bit before. Anyway, so yeah, it was a great little place to start, 258. So.
Oh, that's cool. So, besides, like, so you just dug Thor because he was kind of different than everything else that you'd seen? Like, that was what was going on?
Well, yeah, you can have a, so you have a character instead of like he can go hang out in the alley in New York City and see what Captain America and Iron Man are doing. He can hang out there. He'll save the universe another day, completely across space and time, and or in the nine worlds that they're. I guess in the next movie, since we're talking about the movie this week with the Dark World, we're gonna. I guess I understand we're gonna see some more of the nine worlds that Norse mythology is based on. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great. And so have you, you've just been reading him like all this time? Like, are you current? You're staying with the current issues and continuity?
Yes, which is, I'm glad that you asked, because if you really like the Simonson run, Jason Aaron, the current writer, the latest incarnation of Thor, it's called Thor, God of Thunder. Jason Aaron's a writer. Isad Ribic drew the first major story arc for him, and it's fantastic. It's probably some of the best stuff since Simonson.
Really?
Yeah, that scope and scale that you're looking for. And really, when we're looking for good Thor stuff, it's Thor's kind of an intelligent character, and it can have a little bit of humor. When the runs that aren't as fun are basically when he's Hulk with the hammer, just kind of hitting people over the head and, mm-hmm. and you know, drinking ale in the bar with Hercules or something strange like that. But, yeah, Yeah, Jason Aaron's current run is fantastic. I cannot recommend it strong enough. And right now, actually, they're doing a story. Ron Garney's doing the art with it, and they're visiting the same major villain that we're going to be seeing in the movie this weekend, Malekith. So the Dark
Elf. Wow, oh, yeah. That's cool.
I'm glad you said that about the character. You know, having some humor and you know some intelligence and because I think that is one of the reasons why he never grabbed me is every time I you know had any sort of interaction with him, which is admittedly been very brief. That was kind of my impression was the sort of Hulk with a hammer. You know maybe not quite to that degree, but generally just you know okay he's really powerful. You know, and I never really sort of saw the charm of the character.
Yeah, I can agree with that, and also the way they use the language, it often seemed, you know, they try and make him talk different, but it never seemed to be written well when I've interacted with it, when I've read it before, and so it just comes off goofy.
Gotcha, like the different language. I think it's really interesting, Don, that you like said all that stuff, because I remember... It's not that I ever disliked Thor. I mean, I always thought it was kind of cool, but the thing, my issue with Thor, which is funny because I'm thinking about this, is I was a big Superman fan, still kind of am. I mean, I'm not into the new DC 52 or any of that, but the reason that so many people say they can't identify with Superman is because, like, oh, he's so godlike. Oh, you know, how can I identify with this character? He can just solve anything and do anything. And thinking back on it now, like, I think that's why originally I never connected with Thor, because I definitely got into comics because of that soap opera aspect, which is kind of like lame to kind of say out loud, but you didn't realize it was a soap opera. But you know what I mean? The angst of like Spider-Man and you know, just the drama of the X-Men, you know, and I guess I never really saw Thor as... that sort of having that depth, because he was an Asgardian, you know what I mean? And his world seemed kind of removed. Can you speak to that a little bit, Don?
I do think, and I think Marvel and some of the writers had some problems, because after, you know, nearly four decades of the series running, it got canceled a while back. It took them about 3 years, really, to get it back on track, because they couldn't find anybody to really attack those issues and supposedly make him relatable. I think, again, the differences were that angsty elements of comics where so many heroes didn't really want the job. I thought Thor was kind of fun because he did want the job. He did want the responsibility. And they had, you know, given him that human half for a really long time, the Donald Blake aspect of the character, supposedly to make him more relatable. But kind of his the Thor version of Kryptonite, if he lost his hammer for 60 seconds, he turned back into a old frail doctor with the cane. But the thing that makes him relatable, I think, is that he cares about humanity and he doesn't have to. The power of the character, and I do understand that it can be the same kind of problem for Superman, but the things that make Superman fun is that, this for the same reason, he wants the job. He doesn't have to help out humanity, but he chooses to because he relates to humans, and they're important to him. And through that lens of why humans are important to either Superman or Thor, that's so then as a reader, you get to go, okay, yeah, well, hey, we're not so bad. Humans aren't so bad. We're kind of cool. We're worth protecting, right?
Yeah. I would hope so.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. These days, you never know.
I think you're right, though. That is like a good hook, and I think some of the, you know, certainly the. Certainly, the movie and the Avengers, the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon gave me a taste of that, and also the Thor, the Mighty Thor, there, the one by Roger Langridge and Chris Samnee. That really gave me a taste of that, where it's like one that gave me sympathy for the character, because it's like he was kind of trapped there. He was kind of like, it's almost like he was abandoned, and then you're saying that he really could just head back home or just wander off, and who cares? Humans are on your own. But there is something that sort of that he kind of falls in love with normal Earth, which is sort of like seems unique among the other Asgardian gods.
Yeah, he's the only one of all the gods that actually cares one way or another, and that also causes, for his angst, it causes his, that at home with his dad, with his family, with the other Asgardians, like, why do you care so much? You should be, you know, paying attention to stuff here, you know, in the Nine Realms, and not be focusing or worried so much about humanity. So, yeah, his difficulty, all of his difficulties with his father and again with all of his family stuff is that he cares too much. And so, I mean, that's part of the fun. And, the run that you're mentioning was a really, really fun, too short-lived, but yeah. That was a great run with Thor. But yeah, as far as, yeah, with Jason Aaron is the story started off this list without too much, any spoilers, as a bit of a mystery. So he even had Thor almost like, you know, Batman-like, and as a detective trying to break it down using his brains to solve the story, and then the things that he had to do to win the day. It was, yeah, that's when he's the most fun. And I can totally understand, we have to blame Stan Lee for the Shakespeare speak, you know, the dows and those, you know, because Stan was saying, I wanted him to be more formal, but, you know, you don't have to make him, you know, be Elizabethan to necessarily be formal. But Simonson kind of corrected that. He used less of it, a lot less of it than anybody else. And I think Aaron's kind of doing the same thing. Not very much of the formality of speech. Maybe, you know, some words. And of course, they have the special Thor font, right? So now we know he's talking, you know, in a manner that's
right.
Really important, because he's got his own font.
Yeah. Who was the letter? Right. It was like John Workman did the letters. Yeah, John Workman. At least in the Simonson run, like all right. That fantastic lettering. That's great. It's really funny because I always liked the Shakespeare talk. Like, I always thought it made the comics seem like more intelligent, maybe, than they were. You know, I always felt like, oh, he sounds very lofty to me. You know, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, wow, he sounds very sort of refined. Like, this is comics for the upper class. You know what I mean? I mean, I just always, I think the odd thing about Thor, like, what is it, Journey into Mystery? I don't know which issue it was. That's the issue that he's like in, that's the series that he was introduced in, right? Journey into Mystery.
Number 83 is the very first appearance of Thor, right?
Oh, nice, good call. See, you
and
have
yes.
The right guy. But the first issue, I think I remember picking it up in my local library, not the first issue, but like Origins or Son of Origins or one of those paperbacks that they used to have when we were kids. And right. Reading the Thor thing, and he was fighting like Martians or something, right? Like these little orange.
The Stone Men of Saturn, yes.
Stone Men of Saturn. And I remember thinking, like, this is like really kind of weird, because you've got this dude with a hammer and the wings on his head, and he's fighting aliens. Like, I felt like he was a little out of place, but that's kind of why I was kind of into it when I first read it. I was like, this is different. Like, and now you look back at that era of Marvel, and they were doing a lot of like really crazy things, you know?
Yeah, there's still a debate somewhat in the existing Thor fan community whether he should have the formal speak or not, but at least with the last couple generations of writers, they're bringing some new fans to Thor, which is good. So, I mean, the good thing about comics, the one of the glories of it, is we have those back issues or those trade paperbacks or those where we can look back on, you know, get the formal speak if we want to, you know, have him in the back of the tavern hanging out with Hercules, getting drunk, you know, on ale or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that was always the good thing, too, that he had a little bit of the, even though he was a god, he had a little bit of the common man, too. He liked to go out and drink and get rowdy and, you know, have a good time.
Yeah, well, that going back to the Norse mythos, that was kind of his in with humanity, and that's, I think, what Kirby was trying to bring, that relatability, you know, for Jack Kirby, his idea of that relatability was directly part of the Norse mythos, and that he was humanity's favorite god, because he would, you know, break bread and have a couple of ales with them and help them, you know, beat back the frost giants of winter and all that good stuff. So
sure. Did they ever explain his love for the humans and for Midgard? Like, is that ever really discussed?
Well, in his, as far as the actual Norse mythos, Odin is his father, and Earth, Mother Earth, is his mom. So he is of Earth, and he is of Asgard. So that's why he's always had that empathy through the mythos that carries over to the comics. That he's just, you know, so it and. They don't ever show Mother Earth really in the comics. They, you know, so Odin got remarried, of course, to somebody that he could talk to. But it's still a lot of fun to see which ways they draw on that empathy. But yeah, in essence, he is of Midgard and of Asgard. So that's why he kind of wants to be the caretaker of sorts for humanity.
Oh, that's interesting.
In those early issues, or especially the first issue, which I actually had never read, his first appearance till relatively recently, I was struck by how young he seemed, because whenever I've read him, he seemed like an older character. And obviously, you know, he's long lived because he's a god, but I mean, he seems like, you know, an adult. And somehow the way that he read, I don't know, maybe it was the way Kirby drew him in that first issue or what, but he seemed really like a sort of a kid, like a, you know, sort almost a teenager.
Yeah, he does come across pretty immature from what I remember.
Well, yes, following the stories, the lessons, the reason that Odin sent him back to Earth and gave him that human half, that human frailty, was to teach Thor humility, that he'd become kind of a little bit too cocky, and this was kind of a start over where he's like, you're not quite worthy enough to be an Asgardian prince, and so here's the lesson. That's really what you get kind of the first 10, 15, 20 years is Odin constantly trying to remind Thor of that humility. So that's why he gave him that 60 seconds to, if he lost his hammer for 60 seconds, he would turn back into that human. So he could appreciate life more and he could grow up a little bit more. But yeah, so he was, I guess, that almost reborn in a way as a younger kid with that human half. And even though he has that old soul about him, he's been around a long time. Again, that's being explored in the brand new series with Jason Aaron that he's writing. He's writing a really young Thor who's the one who needs humility. He's writing the current version Thor, and then Thor basically kind of turning into his dad across this huge space and time kind of stories where all three of these characters are being examined at the same time.
Well, that sounds really cool. So, I mean, just for people who don't know, like Don Blake, because, I mean, Don Blake is not in the movies and not really in the recent animated versions of Thor. Like, Don Blake is basically sort of a quote-unquote lame doctor persona that Thor is placed into because Thor is too cocky for Asgard or does something too boastful from what I remember, and Odin banishes him from Asgard and traps him in Don Blake's body. Is that correct? Am I correct in that assessment?
Yeah, that's the essence of it. And again, I think the relatability factor where they were trying to, almost a Shazam, you know, thing from the doctor limping around a very, very weak human form to deal with that you could identify with that transforms into a very powerful figure.
He's also my uncle.
Well, say hey to Uncle Blake for me.
I will.
Oh, that's right.
I always felt like that was done, that whole doctor thing was done just to give him a secret identity. Like that, like it felt like at the time a superhero had to have a secret identity, so they figured a way out to do that.
That's interesting because the Fantastic Four didn't have secret identities, right? So why introduce that into Thor? Huh.
That's true.
That's really interesting. So, yeah, I mean, any thoughts on that?
I was going to say, Blake is currently And it was Walt Simonson that first decided to throw away the Don Blake, that Thor had grown up enough, he didn't need the Don Blake persona.
Yeah.
And he even had, I think, right to begin his run, that S.H.I.E.L.D. had figured out that he was Don Blake anyway, so Thor just ditched the whole persona and the whole idea. Currently, we don't have Don Blake in the run. Straczynski brought him back. It's gone back and forth. I think the Dan Jurgens run, they didn't bring back Donald Blake, but they made him into an EMT, a drug dealing EMT.
What?
For a little while. Oh yeah, just for relatability purposes. Yeah, that was a good run.
Oh, I must have missed that. Whoa.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay if you missed it.
Oh, Dan Jurgens.
What about the? Do you have any thoughts on the Thor of the Ultimates? Because they had the Ultimates universe, which modernized things a bit.
Yeah, it was kind of, now that one's, Thor is a bit of a kind of a new ager, kind of a hippie hanging out with his followers and in a disco rather than just a regular bar. But as far as how he was introduced there, I think that the Ultimates Thor, and he had to go through the same thing. Does anybody really believe that he's a god? And Iron Man not buying into it, and really Loki playing that first arc with the Ultimates is the best by far. If you want to examine, I guess a different version of Thor that's just as fascinating. He's a little bit different. He's kind of a little bit of a hippie in that, and it's totally fun. It's totally different, totally fun look at the character, and Loki does play a pretty wicked trick on him in that arc.
Yeah, speaking of Loki, he really, probably perhaps because of the movie, but he's really kind of come out as a character that Marvel's grabbing hold of. What do you think of all that?
The movie Loki's fantastic, and he really does personify the best elements of Loki in that, and their relationship, and the complexity of it, where Loki's still all about Asgard, but he'd rather rule it his way than to see Thor get the throne. So they have that really contentious relationship. But at the end of the day, Thor still has, like he does for humanity, it's like he's evil, he's horrible, but he's still my brother.
Right.
So he has that conflict with it. That's what makes Loki a great arch, rival for him in dealing with that, because eventually Loki is going to trick Thor into trusting him again, and it's a dog chasing its tail, but it's kind of fun.
Do you think that the popularity of the character, obviously the actor and the look that he has in the movie helped with that, but the lack of the horns, like, they seem to have abandoned that to a degree? Because his costume used to be a bit on the ridiculous side.
Well, they got rid of Thor's helmet, too, which kind of bugs me. But what are you going to do? I mean, I don't know. Do you? I almost think, and Corey, do you think that the helmets might have hampered their performance,
Yeah, I could see that, especially for Loki. I mean, that'd get pretty wobbly. It'd be hard to sort of like stabilize those and move around in that. But I also took a lot of the design sense of the first Thor movie from J. Michael Straczynski and Olivier Coipel, or however you say his name.
Fancy.
I know he's. I assume he's French. He's got to be.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of the look of that, although obviously there was Kirby in there, but it seems like as far as Thor's look and Loki, well, I don't know, was Loki even in that run, actually? I don't even know.
He was a woman. Wait, no, is that Straczynski you're talking
about? Yeah, he was a woman.
Yeah. He got turned into a woman, or he turned himself into a woman. I read the first trade and liked it.
He possessed Lady Sif in that run, yeah.
Oh, he possessed Lady Sif.
Right.
Oh, that's complicated.
What did you think of that run?
Straczynski run is fantastic. It was a great. That was when we talked about the hiatus of the series, the 3 years off. It was Straczynski that said, "Hey, I can do this. I can bring Thor back." He had the ego for it, and he actually was able to pull it off. He borrowed a little bit from Gaiman's, American Gods, a little bit as far as the setting, as far as finding themselves, but the one person who was missing was Thor's, main girlfriend in the comics, Lady Sif, who's in the movies. But obviously there was that kind of that triangle, because you've got Jane Foster as well that he has to choose from, the tough choices of a god, and Jane Foster, Lady Sif. But yeah, and Loki had kidnapped her, and he was using her form, so that female form that you saw was him stealing Sif's body. So it's extra creepy.
Oh, because at the end of the first trade, which I have, and I actually want to see if I can pick up that omnibus at some point too. It's just I think I remember you see Loki and it's a woman, and I remember it looking like Sif, but I don't remember them saying that it was Sif's body. Did they say that later on or something? Or
yeah, he's keeping her hidden in a hospital in another body where he transformed her soul, where she's dying. So, and hiding her from Thor, that's the only one of the Asgardians that Thor can't find.
Oh, interesting. So, let me ask you this, kind of going back to the beginning again a little bit. As far as as far as Thor being banished, it was kind of Loki's trickery that kind of got him into trouble, correct?
Usually, at that particular time, I mean, as far as Thor really did, and for the comics, I mean, at least for what they presented to the readers for a long time, Thor did have some growing up to do, some, you know, thinking that he could just accomplish everything, you know, through brute force instead of thinking. So that was the development curve, was him growing up a little bit. So yes, Loki got him in some trouble, and they've retconned that story. I don't know if we get to use retcon in the show a lot, but they changed the story several times over the years. But yes, sometimes it was just Thor's audacity that got him in trouble. Sometimes it's Loki helping him get into trouble. But either way, you know, the character at one point did need some growing up, and they've kind of let him do that. And I guess the version that they're showing now is pretty cool. Well, like I said, in the current run, they kind of let him be the grown up. They kind of let him be the guy that's figured some things out, and the smarter version that's far more entertaining and easier, hopefully easier access for anybody that wants to give Thor another shot. It's definitely worth the checking out Jason Aaron's work in. Now, unfortunately, Esad Ribic, his amazing art, he only did the first arc, but Ron Garney's painted work is pretty sharp. We talked about, you guys mentioned Coy Bell for Straczynski's run, more great artwork. One great thing about Thor's series is they've had a string of Hall of Fame writers, I mean, and more artists. The art's almost always been good, regardless of who's writing it.
The art now, is that the same artist that did the Loki miniseries? The 4-issue painted miniseries? Because the covers look like it.
Yes, Ribic did the Loki series, that little kind of 4 miniseries, and they actually did a animated series based on that art too, a little animated feature with Loki and Thor based on that artwork. But Ribic, yeah, it's fantastic artwork.
Then it's worth picking up for the art alone, because that Loki miniseries was fantastic. And honestly, if there wasn't a story in it and it was just the artwork, it would have been fantastic.
Agreed.
That's interesting. It's I'm going to have to check all that stuff out, because I definitely, especially after the first Thor movie, I remember, because again, like I said, I loved the Walt Simonson run, like when I was reading that stuff. And I did pick up the Straczynski trade, the first one, because I was curious. But Don, do you know the reason of like the 3-year sort of blackout with Thor? Like, what happened to him? Did he just like disappear, or was it like Marvel killed him off, and you know, like happens in so many comics, like he comes back? Like, what was the reason for Thor's disappearance? It didn't have anything to do with Civil War, right?
Well, they teased his return somewhat in Civil War.
Yeah,
but yeah,
okay.
But yeah, what had happened in his own series, the Jurgens run, kind of took a deep spiral and took a good chunk off of sales. A lot of people had abandoned ship. But then they brought in a new writer, new artist, for a 6-issue arc at the end of his second volume, which was called Ragnarok, which is the Norse end of the world. And they basically ended the world and had Thor... It was a terrible ending. Basically, Thor said, "Forget this. I'm taking my ball. I'm going home. We're not going to. The Asgardians. We're not going to play anymore. We're just going to go away." And that's kind of how it ended. In essence, it's worse if you read it.
Yeah. So
yeah, that was during the Avengers Disassemble thing.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh.
So he was gone for that time, and really they were just waiting for another writer. And then once Civil War came along, they said, "Okay, well, we'll tease that we're bringing Thor back in Civil War." And of course, it was a tease, because it was just. It was obviously in Civil War. Now they call the character Ragnarok now, but the cyborg Thor that showed up and killed. Giant Man. Yeah,
was Goliath.
Yes,
that's right. Oh, my God,
the correct name character. Yes.
So, do you think that they were kind of just like at the end of that whatever Ragnarok like six issue thing, that they were kind of just. We don't know what to do with them. Let's just give them a break for a while.
there were all kinds of rumors. At one point, the rumor was, and it was fairly solid that we found it afterwards, Neil Gaiman was supposed to do the relaunch, and then he got busy and had other things going on. So he left kind of his notes and his outline. They, I think, approached Peter David. They approached, Bendis, a couple other people. They said, hey, we really want to do this relaunch right with a good writer. And then eventually Straczynski said, hey, I'll do it. I know exactly what to do, and I'll use a little bit of Neil's idea, and we'll bring it back the right way. And they really did. Coy Bell's art, again, and another really good artist for the first.
I saw the first couple issues of that, and the artwork in that one is really good as well.
Yeah, I remember with the Straczynski relaunch, I was very interested in the way that the artist drew Thor's face, because like they definitely changed the way they were drawing him. Like they gave him kind of a broader nose. Like he had been in fights, like he had been in combat and like taken a couple of blows to the face. And I just remember thinking like, oh, that's really interesting. That's sort of like and they changed his armor, you know, his quote-unquote costume.
They updated it.
Yeah, they updated it, exactly. So I just remember thinking that that looked really compelling to me, especially the face, because I remember growing up in the 80s, there would always be a comment in the Avengers, or somebody would be guest starring, and they would be like, oh, Thor, he's just the best looking, you know, or he's so dreamy, and, you know, and just thinking like, okay, but in my head, like, Thor was always the fighter, the bruiser, the sort of like Conan the Barbarian, like that he was kind of good looking, but not in sort of like a classical, you know, Brad Pitt sort of way. You know what I mean? Does
right.
that make sense? So that's why that I picked up that trade, because I was like, oh, they're doing something different. But Don, have you been reading the books consistently since you picked up that first issue? Like just picking up Thor all that time?
Absolutely, yeah. I've got a whole run of the, even the bad stuff. Yeah, I've got them all.
That's amazing. So let me ask you this, because I've been, like I said, I picked up the Walt Simonson Omnibus, which is absolutely fantastic. I mean, the recoloring that they've done on this book, I think, is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's worth the purchase price alone. But when that was happening, because you know how fanboys are today, everyone just gets kind of freaked out, and they're like, no, you're changing this. Like, when they do Beta Ray Bill, because, spoiler to everyone who's listening, when they introduce Beta Ray Bill and they fight, and, like, Beta Ray Bill kind of sort of beats him, like, were you pissed off at that? Were you like, what is going, like, were you, like, up in arms about it, or were you just like, this is the most crazy, interesting thing that I've read in this book in a while, and I'm going to go with it?
It was, at the time, it was very, very controversial. There are still a few, and a few older Thor fans that are a little bit bitter about the Beta Ray storyline.
Really?
But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, because, you know, Thor's got to win them all, right? You know, so I love Bill, and sure. Beta Ray Bill statue right next to the Thor statues and all the other action figures and stuff. But nice. It's Bill is a fascinating character, because what Simonson was doing, the genius of that story was, he said, let's take a look at the inscription on the hammer. You know, if whoever holds this hammer, you know, be worthy, you know, is worthy of the power of Thor. So Simonson says, what does that mean? You know, can anybody pick it up? Can it, you know, what does worthiness mean? What is worthiness? And here was a strange alien trying to save his home planet. And he's aided by Odin in his victory, you know, because Odin, again, thinks Thor's getting a little bit out of hand, thinking he's too cool. And that humility, you know, lesson always coming back. So, but it still was fascinating. But at the time, yeah, there were a lot of people going, he can't do that. Nobody else can, you know, the hammer debates with Thor. Now, come on, for you got to get into Thor just so you can be a part of the debate. Who gets to pick up the hammer, right?
Superman gets to pick up the hammer because Kurt Busiek says so.
Well, doesn't Captain America also, isn't he able to pick it up?
Yeah, I think at one point, didn't Captain America pick it up?
We've had a few. Wonder Woman, Cap, Superman. Well, but at least Busiek, you know, gave us that explanation in that same story arc where he said that it's the enchantment is the hammer knows when it's needed, basically. And then Superman, because if you remember, Superman went back to pick it up and he couldn't because his worthiness time, you know, that time of need was over, so now it was back to only Thor picking it up. So, you know, a little bit of an appeasement there maybe, but, you know, I think it makes it interesting, and it certainly makes it fun to talk about whether, you know, Hulk, you know, can pick it up, you know, or whether it was gravity in space the one time that he got a hold of it. And, you know, that was the explanation at that point in time, that it was because it was a gravity-free atmosphere, Hulk got to ride around on it a little bit in space. So it's fun.
Hulk picked it up?
Not exactly. He got to ride around on it in space.
Gotcha. So it's really...
Juggernaut did that once, where the hammer had hit him, and then he grabbed it to on the way back to Thor's hand. And...
Oh my God, we're such nerds.
Yes, we are. Yeah,
that's awesome. Juggernaut picked it. That's so great.
He wrote it. Yeah, you gotta.
It's
hang
great.
On.
So,
yeah.
Like, what are some of your, what's the most favorite storyline that you've got? Like, as far as like Thor is concerned, like, what's the big one to you? Is it the Simonson thing, or is it Kirby, or like, what is your absolute favorite storyline?
Well, I mean, when you get it up to that point where you have 500-600 issues to choose from, which is kind of where we're getting to, you can't just have one, you know. So I didn't start off with the Lee Kirby stuff, but it is really, really good, and the all the characters that Kirby introduces, and he does that, the scope and the scale, you really can't go wrong reading the first couple of trades, because now they collect the Masterworks in paperback, so it's not as hard to go back and get some of those early stories. And they're really fun. Obviously, like all the other, you know, Silver Age stuff, it can get a little campy, a little cheesy, but it's still fun. I mean, obviously, Stoneman and Saturn for your first villain, I mean, it's a little loopy. But so you can't go wrong there. And obviously, the Simonson run is fantastic. I kind of go back and forth between those two favorites, but I have to say, if Jason Aaron keeps it up, he's going to be in the top. We're going to have to mention all three names at the same time all the time. The Jason Aaron God of Thunder run is just fantastic. I cannot say, you know, get enough praise, because he's really got what Thor is. And then again, he's got the fun. He's made it so he can do young Thor, you know, real-time Thor and future Thor all at the same time. Pretty clever also, I think, as a writer, to be able to just go, why can't I, you know, this is a character that's lived over all these eras, why can't we examine all these different time frames and all these different characteristics of someone, you know, when they're young and who they are today and who they'll be in the future. So he's being selfish. He's doing it all at the same time.
That is kind of smart. Cool. I remember during that period of time when Thor had died from that Ragnarok, and then, you know, he was just, you know, not there until the Straczynski run. But in between that period, I remember them coming out with a few Thor miniseries of him being younger, and I kind of thought, well, that's kind of an interesting idea, and I was surprised that seemed to be such an untapped time period. So yeah, that is smart that he's doing that and working it into the main series, not just sort of this like peripheral miniseries. Oh, look, this is Thor in the year, you know, 52 BC.
Yeah, that, it's interesting, because if you think about it, and the Asgardians are immortal and they've been around for such a long time, like probably the time that Thor is spending with the Avengers is kind of like just like a little sliver of his life, right?
Yeah, but it's a fun little band of people to hang out with, and you're
sure.
All just like, I'm gonna go see what Iron Man's doing, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. At what point did they start really bringing in that Asgardian stuff from... Because, like you said, in that first issue, it's like the Stone Men of Saturn, and it's kind of like wacky alien villains. Were they just doing villains up to a certain point, and then they started bringing in Odin and all that stuff? Or was it, like, immediately after that first issue that they started, like, bringing in all that mythology, or, you know, the sort of Stan Lee Kirby version of Asgardian mythology?
I think it was around 87 they started bringing in some more, you know, you started with Journey of Mystery 83, I think it was Journey of Mystery 87 around, and around 119 they started doing Tales of Asgard in the back, to just to show some, like the Warriors 3 that you get to see in the movies now, where he's getting hanging out with Grimm and Grimm Hogan and the Warriors 3 and I don't know if they're going to introduce Baldur the Brave to the movies, but Baldur was a really big part of the mythos and the backup stories. But so they would do a basic kind of a hero story in the front of the book, and then they'd do like 8 pages of short story in the back of Tales of Asgard, showing some of his earlier adventures and why, you know, the the challenges with Loki were such a big deal, and those are really, really cool. They actually collected some of those Tales of Asgard into separate books these days. It's kind of cool, I guess, in the digital age. If there's some really upside of it, they're making a lot of older material available to us now. So there's some really cool stuff to look up.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, I definitely think that it's probably a character that's kind of been overlooked a lot. I mean, I know I did for a long time. I never really, like I said earlier, was really hardcore Thor fan. Have they ever addressed, and the way this whole kind of like Thor thing or wanting to talk about Thor kind of got started with me, and then, you know, I was talking to Corey and Liad and a couple of other guys that are on this podcast. I was watching, I don't know if you've seen it yet, this like superheroes documentary that they showed on PBS. Like, did you see that at all?
I've seen a few documentaries. At which one?
Well, it just aired like a week or two ago. It was like a 3-hour documentary on superheroes. Like,
I've not seen it.
Well, anyway, somebody in the and that's neither here nor there. But I just got aggravated because somebody says the line, "Superheroes, they're our mythology." And I was like, "No, they're not our mythology. You know, we don't build churches around them. We don't, we don't." Wait for them to wither our crops when we piss them off. You know, they're not mythology, but in Marvel Comics, Thor is, I mean, not mythology because he's real. How do they ever address that? Like, that this guy says he's a god, and obviously we have Christianity and Buddha, you know, Muslim, and you know, we have all these different religions on the planet. Has there ever been like people worshiping the Asgardians, or have they ever addressed like these guys say that they're gods? Like, how do they talk about that?
As far as the context of the comic books, I mean, they generally try to avoid it. You know, Thor says who he is, and a lot of people don't believe it until they actually get it. You know, he takes them to Asgard to help out on a mission there or something. But they have two or three times where writers will try to introduce it in, and usually they do it with kid gloves, and they make it kind of a sweet story, like he'll, you know, back in time helped a knight, you know, during the Crusades, you know, that kind of a thing, where, you know, everybody's part of the big, you know, same universe. They addressed it a little bit at the end of when they ended the series with that Ragnarok arc, that there are different levels of gods and overseers. Obviously, if you know, longtime Marvel readers will, you know, whenever you see Kirby's big, you know, giant robots that created all the universe and
Celestials, so, right,
dealing with the Celestials and dealing with you know, all kinds of ways that we can look at how the universe got addressed. But they don't necessarily mean Straczynski looked at it a little bit. So they had a preacher towards the end of that arc that Straczynski had started another, and then I think Giron came in to finish Straczynski's stories, where they had like a preacher in there. So sometimes it's addressed, but they never really hit you over the head with it. And it just like probably the best examination of it recently was the Ultimate Thor run, where they were just trying not to believe what was going on. So that's kind of a fun way to examine the question.
Yeah.
Don't they also say that on some of them that it's possible that they're just aliens and that it's super advanced alien technology, stuff like that?
Warren Ellis did a 4-issue arc called World Engine, where he strongly suggested that was the possibility, that the tree of life that's the basis for the Asgardians' existence and life was like an alien plant that landed, and they're all aliens, and that's, you know, I guess one way to try to address it in a non-controversial way, unless you're, you know, been following the books for a while and you're like, wait a minute, they're not aliens, they fight aliens, they're not aliens themselves, and it was kind of confusing, and then they, you know, from there they turned him into a non-powered you know, kind of a biker dude with chains and really, really pretty hair. So that was the end of the first volume. So you understand when they get into train wrecks, the series has to end. But
the movie really, I mean, basically said, you know, that they are other dimensional beings. You know, pretty as outright as you could get, I think.
But I mean, that's not really an answer, because in a way, if, even if they were gods, they're kind of in another dimension, sort of.
Yeah, so I mean, are they like, do you know if the Asgardians, are they like the Eternals, or are they descendant? Well, the Eternals were kind of like a science project by the Celestials, correct? If I'm remembering correctly, if anyone even knows
right.
anything
that's,
about
that. Yeah, that's right. And
yeah.
Sounds right.
And so are the Asgardians like an offshoot of that at all? Or are they descended from humans? I guess, or is this just stuff that has been hands-off, like nobody's ever really addressed it? Because I can't imagine that it wouldn't be addressed in some way in 600 issues, 40, 50 years of continuity, right?
Yeah, a few times, but it's usually either that they've approached it a few different ways. One, they kind of approach it, it doesn't really matter, all the universe parts kind of fit together. And another way they look at it as, okay, there's these Asgardian gods, and they're gods, but there's a higher power even greater than them. It's been a suggestion before, so it's supposedly not to necessarily, anger Christians or create riots in the streets. But the... Mm-hmm. Overall, it's that they're fine. But in the Marvel Universe, no, they're not. They get to be gods, and I really do think that was Kirby's intent. That and then they brought in some, you know, and we have the Greek gods with Hercules, and all they brought in the gods from India before in different pantheons. And interestingly enough, that's how Jason Aaron's arc starts off with a god killer that goes around trying to kill them all just to make the number more manageable, you know, kind of like a number of mutants, right? You know, so yeah, there's a god killer that goes around. That's how he meets Thor. Is he's running around and he does a pretty bang up job of getting rid of a lot of them. So
oh wow, so it's like a massacre, like the mutant massacre, like you said, except for Asgardians.
Well, yeah. Well, all the other different pantheons, all the other different worlds that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like thousands and thousands of gods and all these other different worlds, and this guy's decided that people shouldn't presume that role of gods, and he's off because he was disappointed by the gods at one point. So he goes around and kills them all, and so he's a pretty nasty bad guy. Pretty good way to invent a new bad guy for Thor to have to deal with. So overall, I think it's not something. I mean, I think you can be a good Christian and read Thor and not feel like you have to divert your belief systems or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's a little bit of escapism and fun, and that's how most of the writers, I think, at the end of the day, treat it. Is although, you know, like I said, you'll still get it, but they'll find a way to, hey, you have a belief and I have a belief and we're compatible. You know, that's kind of how they treat it in the comics.
Well, it's interesting because you never saw like Thor and Hercules kind of like face off that way, being like, hey, I'm the one that should be worshipped, or our people are better than yours. Like, they always just fought because they were blowhards, you know what I mean, and just getting ticked off at each other. You never really saw any, like, you know, because Marvel, they would use, like, you know, the Roman gods or the Greek gods and even Egyptian gods, you know, and then you had the Eternals and, you know, God knows what else. You
God
know?
Knows God, right, yeah. So, yeah. Well, actually, and to begin with, one of the first big arcs for the Lee Kirby stuff was the Olympians fighting the Asgardians. That Odin and Zeus, you know, got into a bit of a disagreement, and then they let their kids kind of duke it out for them. So yeah, they not necessarily as far as Olympia, you know, Greek gods are better than Norse gods kind of thing. It was just that in their own power structure, in their own, you know, areas of you know, agreement to the best way to defend the universe kind of a thing, but. Yeah, nothing like you should believe in us because we're better. They've never approached it that way, which is kind of cool.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, I just remember because I was raised Catholic and not so much at all now, you know, not to get into that discussion. But I remember thinking as a little kid, like, wait a minute, they say they're gods. And kind of being into Greek mythology and stuff like that as a kid, reading a lot of that. And not really being confused by it, but just being like, how does this work in the Marvel universe, like, you know? So yeah, I mean, I guess they never really kind of delved into exactly how it all like panned out. Yeah, so I mean, I just remember because we were also kind of discussing before you joined on, like, about the new gods and trying to figure out how that all worked, because what I remember about the new gods in DC was that they were supposedly descended from the old gods. But the old gods were still hanging around because you had Wonder Woman and the Greek god, you know what I mean? Like, there was
right.
So it would just all be kind of like this big jumble, at least over in DC. Marvel seemed to kind of keep it all, you know, in line, at least for a while. I don't know how well that played out later on.
Well, you can blame Kirby for New Gods, too. So
yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, it's all that crazy stuff. So what did you think about the movie? And what are some of your favorite, like, I guess there, he hasn't been around a lot in animation, but are there any favorite, like, versions of animated versions that you liked? Or
well, for animated versions, I thought the latest Avengers cartoons had been on the last couple of years on Cartoon Network. That was a pretty decent representation. For Thor, as far as the movie goes, I absolutely love the first movie. I'm a little nervous with the one coming out this week because Kenneth Branagh gave so much credibility and he really did a great job of, I guess it's fans because you guys hit all kinds of topic areas, but when it's your hero's turn to go to the big screen, it's going to go really well or really poorly. So you, Kenneth Branagh did a fantastic job, and I love the first movie without him being involved with the second one. So I'm a little bit nervous, you know, coming for this Friday, but hopeful because Hemsworth, you know, other than being Captain Kirk's dad, he's a fantastic Thor.
Well, it's interesting because right now it's at like 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I don't think you got a lot, or at least last time I checked, which was a couple of days ago.
Hasn't it been out already for like a week or two in other parts of the world?
Yeah, in England, I think it's been
out. And it's doing fantastic.
I think even Mexico.
Oh, really? Why are we last now? We used to be first.
I know. It's very frustrating. I have a friend who lives in Mexico, and I always see his Facebook status, and it's like, I just went to see this 2 weeks before it comes out in America. I'm like, oh,
what
that's
the hell?
Nice.
They're being made by America.
The terrorists won.
Oh my god! Well, I'm very psyched for this one because I did like the first one a lot, but I felt like it was hampered by having to be tied into S.H.I.E.L.D. You know what I mean? Like, I did not like all the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff in the first movie, but I'm very excited for this one because it looks like it's definitely treading in that Dungeons and Dragons, you know, Asgard, Lord of the Rings sort of realm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, when I saw the first movie, I kind of agreed because, you know, they taking his powers away again, you know, that kind of storyline. But I have to say, you know, for if we get a pretty good crowd for the second movie, it's going to be because we've maybe added some women and some other people that didn't necessarily like Thor or ever read Thor or even hear of Thor, you know, other than checking out Chris Hemsworth. It's my wife. When she saw the movie, she's not a big comic reader, so she has to put up with all my weird stuff. But
same here.
Yeah. So, but she liked the movie because when he lost his powers and had to hang out with everybody, she got to take that moment to relate to the character and the struggle and him hanging out with everybody else. That was her favorite part of the movie and the reason she liked it. So maybe we'll get a few more fans because they did do the crazy S.H.I.E.L.D. arc. But yeah, I'm totally looking forward to, you know, running around the nine worlds and, you know, beating up frost giants or stone giants with the hammer. That'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I really... Didn't you think the Destroyer went down a little too easy? I mean, that was a cool-ass set of armor, and I was like,
yeah,
ah!
But I have to say, the first movie, I agree. That fight was not that convincing, and it was kind of... You kind of saw the end coming, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but for me, all the armor stuff, not necessarily on Thor, but everyone else, seemed really kind of, I don't know, plasticky to me. I'm picky about that stuff, but I don't know if it's just me. Maybe possibly.
I was actually pretty astounded by the design of it. I remember being like, wow, this looks really cool. And then, you know, when they started talking about, like, you know, science being like magic and that sort of thing, like, I kind of definitely drifted away from, like, it needing to look like Boorman's Excalibur, you know, where that really looks like steel, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
The texture of it didn't really bother me. It was more like the visuals of the whole thing where I was just like, it was much more than what I was expecting, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't expecting it to look that lush. You know,
I'm kind of with Liad on that. It did seem a little Halloween costumey at times, and I was wishing that at least Asgard and certain designs like that were more Kirby-esque I was, you know, I mean, it looked really grand and neat, but I was just kind of, you know, I was just wanting, you know, one of Thor's crazy spread, you know, splash pages to just be on the screen.
Corey's pulling out the comic nerd. It's not Kirby enough.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No Kirby dots. There were no Kirby dots.
That's true. Right? Kirby dots
and
would
some
be awesome.
Squiggly lines.
Yeah.
Randomly.
Squiggly lines. Oh, man. Kirby's awesome.
There needed to be more fists coming at the screen.
Yeah. Like forced perspective shots.
It was in 3D.
Yeah, it was in 3D. Forced perspective shots with like giant fists coming at you and the hammer. Well, that's awesome. I'm psyched for the next one. I really dig the whole thing. I really wish that they would explore the Sif relationship a little more, because it seems like that's kind of gone out the window, so that they can explore, you know, the Natalie Portman thing. Mostly because maybe I want to see Sif some more, because damn, Sif, she's good looking. Anyway, but I'm excited for the next movie. I think it's going to be pretty solid. I mean, I don't know if it's going to do Iron Man 3 numbers at the box office.
Probably not.
I mean, $1 billion, that's a tall order. But
no, probably not.
I mean, I think it's going to do well, because, I mean, like you said, Don, I pretty much, my wife was, you know, she's not into comics. And when I said, hey, should we go see the next Thor movie? Should we get a sitter? She was like, yeah, let's do that. Like, let's go see it. And, you know, she probably wants to stare at Chris Hemsworth or whatever, but I can live with that. So, I appreciate you joining us, Don. It's been really cool talking to you about Thor. Do you have any other, like, recommendations as far as, like, what people should pick up if they're really into Thor, or, like, any really essential storylines that you think people should read or anything? Anything in trade?
I think we hit the main highlights. There's a lot for the older stuff. Right after the Lee Kirby run, the Jerry Conway of TV writing fame, writing Law and Order episodes. He actually had a nice little run on Thor right after Stan Lee. It still kind of has that classic feel. Trying to think of some of the other really fun little bits. There was they addressed the Celestials a little bit during Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz. They had an extended run on Thor. That's probably my favorite story. There's when they get to talk about Thor having to deal with the Celestials, and another bad day for the Destroyer armor. Bad day at the office for the Destroyer armor. But
has there ever been any armor called, like, the whole purpose of the Destroyer armor is to destroy stuff, yet it seems to only get destroyed in the comics.
It's supposed to be like the toughest thing ever, right?
Well, I mean, they're building. It was built to battle specifically the Celestials. When the Celestials come back and decide that the Midgard and Asgard aren't worthy to be in the universe anymore, and they give the old thumbs down, then that's when Odin's supposed to jump in the Destroyer armor and save the Nine Worlds. But we certainly have plans. You know, Earth defense plans should aliens, you know, show up, and whatever we have may not do the trick. I think that's kind of what's happened with the Destroyer armor. So it's still really cool, and it's still powerful enough that when it gets out of hand, or if Loki jumps in there, you know, all kinds of crazy things can happen.
I remember the first time I saw the Destroyer armor was in the Marvel Handbook, the Universe, the Marvel, you know, in the 80s, and it's like a Walt Simonson drawing, and thinking, like, that thing looks badass. Like, just thinking, like, that thing looks awesome. It's just such a good, really good drawing. Cool. Well, this is probably not everything anyone ever wanted to know about Thor, but I think it's been a very fun discussion. Don, I cannot thank you enough for joining us. It's been really good to have you on Part-Time Fanboy.
I appreciate it a lot, and of course, if we want to do, if we want to cover all the bases, I could do a show every day for a couple years, and we can cover it all.
You could do every issue, every 600, do a Thor write up on a talk on every issue of Thor. Yeah, I don't know.
This week in Thor 477, right?
That's great. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Christian Horn. That's Don Lund, Corey Blake, and Leod Goldberg, and this is Part-Time Fanboy, and this has been the Thor Talk. Thanks for doing it, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome. Part-time.
fine.